So today we would like to really get into monitoring, and I'm going to share my screen in terms of some slides that I've put together to sort of get me on this journey. So as long as you can see that. What is the monitoring in the Roo program? And giving you a little bit more context and knowing what some of the expectations are. Some of you are we sort of put you into first cohorts of 2025, just coming in with lots of opportunity to learn and sort of understand the Roo program. But there are other of you who have been with Roo for a while, have experienced some of this monitoring, and this might be an opportunity to fill in some of your gaps of understanding and give you an opportunity to give us some feedback in terms of how well it's working for you. So my objective today is to, cover why monitoring is really important part of this regenerative journey, as you've all come here with the goal of making your farm more regenerative, or helping in terms of understanding what that entails, and also how monitoring is used in managing with a regenerative mindset, and then finally giving you insight into what's all going to be involved with the room monitoring strategy when we do on-farm visits with Wes and Julia and Drew, and at the field days. So with that, setting the context is this is the one of the principles of regenerative agriculture. Really like to set the context in terms of what Roo, the Regenerative Organic Oats program, is about. The role of Roo is to provide a platform for a community of practitioners, us, you, other people that we invite, to nudge participants to solve their problems. Nudge in terms of taking on a different management approach, looking at something differently. We don't expect to be able to provide all of the answers because all of you are in a unique context of your own farm. And two of the primary components of the Roo program and the context in which we're working in is knowledge. And knowledge can have various forms. So knowledge is information with understanding. And there's a lot of information that you deal with day to day, that maybe you feel don't you don't feel confident in understanding, or you have some really unique understanding of what's happening in your place, which would be really awesome for you to share with others. So knowledge involves understanding and understanding in an ecologically context of an ecologically based system, and developing that knowledge in a place base. So that means your place, your context. And the other part is connection. So, having a community of like-minded folks who are sharing a similar purpose, as well as connecting to the other knowledge base, which is the ecology itself, which is self-organizing, can heal itself over time, and also on the other end of the spectrum, because of the food value chain, is we have partners who we are also connecting in terms of helping them develop an appreciation of what challenges are in the field, as well as understanding what the marketplace and their understanding of regenerative farming, and ultimately, because they are the purchaser, understanding what they're looking for. So knowledge and connection, and I want to focus on those parts. First of all, knowledge. We all have unique abilities to solve problems. It's a humanistic character. It's something that often drives us in terms of if we have a question in our mind, we can't settle until we find a way in which we can solve those problems. There is no secret knowledge to acquire before we can act. We can learn while we're doing, and there is no need to wait until we have acquired all of the knowledge there is. And from a personal level, that's been, as a consultant with the expectation that I need to know so much information to be able to be of value to clients and, specifically farmers. It's been a real transition in terms of my sense of who I am and how I show up is that while I have knowledge, the person that I'm interacting with, the farmers I'm interacting, have a whole lot of knowledge of their place. And sometimes it's, we're co most of the time we're collaborating to develop that knowledge. And I'm there as a catalyst to help, challenge assumptions or, say how I'm looking at it or how my decision make process might work. And so it's important at this point to say we, with the program coordinators, Wes and Julia and Drew, we specifically chose, and we were quite blessed to be able to find these folks. They're not trained agronomists with really, broad experience as agronomist. They're there as partners and catalysts to help with the monitoring and help you acquire knowledge. So just, in that context, it's important to, for us to have an appreciation of where we're coming from. So it's also helpful to have an understanding of the breadth of interpretations of what regenerative is. And it's showing up in a lot of places, not just in agriculture, but in many other aspects. So in this context, in terms of how we're working in Roo with the organic oats and other parts of your whole farming system is we're trying to help shift the food system to do that. So shift from food systems that do more to degrade. So we're moving from that end of the spectrum to enhancing the very resources that we depend on for life. So it's not a complete pristine approach. Agriculture still has a very big impact on the landscape, but on the balance, we're trying to enhance the very resources that we depend on from an ecology perspective, the air, water, soil, plants, the non-human organisms, as well as from, social understanding how behavior, and decision making and cultivating relationships. And hopefully we will also, look at the economics because we've opened up our opportunities with end users that are helping us to access those markets. And then what might be challenging in terms of the whole culture around regenerative food systems. So in this is setting the context. This is not the most comprehensive definition, but I think this is helpful. So farming with the regenerative mindset is we are paying attention to the resource that is creating profitability versus focusing solely on profitability. That's not to underestimate the importance of profitability, creates the resources to help to support your family and create your quality of life. We're trying to switch around the balance of that thinking to understanding from an ecological mindset. We're working with a complex system. and it's non-linear. That means it doesn't work like a machine with set parts to do certain things. It means that there are organisms and processes that can be quite adaptable in terms of their abilities. It also means that it requires time, and understanding that it is also a limited resource, but it's also an investment. And also that we need to be present in terms of our intention, as well as being present as a practice. And do understand the appreciation that monitoring can be quite a different practice for all of us, and it can be quite intimidating because we come to it with an expectation that we, can interpret it. I think the one thing that I could advise you is it's most helpful if you come to an observation without the expectation you're going to explain it, but your first primary goal is to observe. So we need to be present to make that happen. And in being present, so when the program coordinators are there with you, there's, that little bit of leverage in terms of helping to keep present, maybe poking a little bit different questions in terms of what are you seeing, what are you observing, as opposed to, well, what does that mean? So just to put that into context. So I'd like to use a couple of quotes from some of the folks that have been really great mentors in the realm of holistic management as well as regenerative agriculture, and the emphasis that I want to stress on here. So we're wanting to change some aspect of our management, and we're looking for different results. So if you want to make small changes, you can change the way you do things. If you want to make major changes, though, you need to change the way you see things. And I'm going to, put a little bit more breadth in terms of how you see things, along with the next quote. So in this picture, maybe you want to jot down a couple of things in terms of how it's speaking to you. There's, two generations that are in nature. They're observing, they're participating, and, they're connecting. So just, that would be how I could interpret from that picture. The other quote that I want to put here is a quote from Gabe Brown, is that your farm is a reflection of you. Now, I'm going to mention this, but I don't want to focus on it. The reflection is not in terms of evaluating if you're doing a great job or a poor job, because when we see a reflection in a mirror or how somebody might, say something to us, that's how we might initially think of a reflection. But more or less, the reflection has a much broader perspective in this context. So the first one I want to point out is, where do you see yourself in your farming system? And this difference in terms of humans as the decision maker and dominance and control lever in the rest of the ecosystem is what is considered the predominant viewpoint. And from an ecological perspective, it is interpreted as the human figure is within the whole community of the ecosystems in which they're placed. So, in reflecting on that, in terms of your decision making, are you utilizing this opportunity that you have in being in relationship with your landscape and all the organisms in it. And I really do appreciate, as I've been with many of you, that being in your landscape and your appreciation is something very important to you. And also, I would say that in all of the farmers that I've dealt with over my career, a $1 million moment would be when a person has the passion and the courage to say that, their landscape or an aspect of their landscape is really important to them. So, I reflect on last week's presentation, where Larry said, having trees and having trees that bear fruit that could be a very good alternative for us is an example of being, that eco-centered versus ego-centered. And so when we're looking at the whole aspect of reflection, we're creating time while we're in the field monitoring. It's the presence and the process of slowing life down, to be present to seeing and observing what's happening. So in water infiltration, when that water goes into the ring, we're asking you to observe, are there bubbles coming out? Is there silt sifting around? And so in the middle one is an example of when, Dorothea and I were in the field with a family of participants, and just the sheer joy of creating that space for, people who might not be directly involved in the management to be present and to see and to reflect. And, Dorothea with some soil and getting up close and seeing what's going on in the soil, what are the other organisms? And then, the fires just to represent the whole value of taking those observations and reflecting on them. So hopefully for you that covered, why the monitoring is an important aspect in the ROO program. So how you see things has a very a significant interpretation in terms of how you see yourself in the outer world. How you see yourself is really about what you're challenging yourself in the inner world. And that's where we're really trying to nudge that mindset. It's really about your management within a mindset and monitoring to help support that mindset. So what are you seeing, observing, and fitting that into your management decisions so that we can connect those things, that the management is decisions aren't just coming from a single point of, you could use in this input to improve your output. It's management decisions and seeing how things are working in the landscape, as well as monitoring is looking at making a management decision and seeing what the impact is. It's not a test. It's to be used within the management framework. So we're focusing on management that is within our control and with a focus on reducing the degradation or, maintaining or improving the resource base. That's what the intentions are all about. And sometimes we sort of get lost in terms of it's that technique or this technique, and those are all very important. And I do appreciate that you have a certain decision process that's ingrained. We're trying to add to that. The challenges with monitoring, because this is a part of a strategy of a program, it's very important to understand what the challenges are. And we certainly would like your input in terms of Is this working for you, where we need to add value, or is there something that is reticent in you, that you're having challenges with? And by having a community of like people around you, that's your support system, because you are doing things differently. From maybe what the what a majority of the people in your community or your household might be saying to you. So the benefit or the value of monitoring certainly is you're focusing on the resource that you are really trying to improve, and you are using measures to determine if the management decisions you have made or have made in the or intending to make are making a difference. So we're shifting the focus in terms of, well, we have a certain productivity or output, and if we add enough inputs or the right inputs, we'll end up with a profit. Or you shift, and this is what holistic management training has helped me focus on, is that you focus on what is the profit you want, and while your outputs might change a little, less quickly or over time, you can manage the inputs. And quite frankly, that's why a lot of people have come to regenerative have found one of the big benefits is some of those inputs that we've been relying on can be reduced. And as you reduce your input cost, you automatically would improve your profit. For some people, the benefit of the Roux monitoring is it's very important in terms of the branding or verification that they are engaged in with the marketing and the food value chain. So, like the ROC certification. With most things and changes, there's always a cost. So if you're buying, more cover crop seed, or you need a new piece of equipment, you can compare the cost of doing the same and getting the same results or doing something different, but there's a risk in that. So if we reflect on the presenters, the panelists last week, is sometimes they manage this risk by doing it in their garden as their experimental place, or they do it in a small area, or really what we're trying to help with this community of practice is de-risking some of the decisions because somebody in your group has already tried that, and they can share with you the results and maybe how they might have had different results if they had made different decisions. So, I did say that reflection was a very important aspect of monitoring and the regenerative mindset. I'd like to take the opportunity of what we heard last week and those of you who were part of the panelist presentation, I just you like to use that as an exercise in reflection. And I'm sharing with you what takeaways that were highlighted for me. And maybe when we get a chance to talk later, you can also share what your takeaways were. So definitely, when we heard from all the panelists, diversity was a key aspect of choosing the multi-species cover crop. And by choosing multiple species, it helped to de-risk the variables. As Ian said, he had a lot of different types of soil groups and topography and the way soil was formed over his landscape. And by using multiple species, be it warm season or cool season and different environmental conditions, there was a reduction of risk of what species might do better in some areas versus the other. So de-risking was a really big aspect of the using multiple species, as well as, you know, it's one of the key principles, and you know, one of the processes that nature uses in terms of, you know, what we see of functioning landscapes, and also one of the tools or decision tools that can be used in ecological systems. We also talked about function. So what is the relationship between plants, if we look at them in terms of this carbon pump, taking in photosynthesis, making it into sugar, sharing at the root system, and then through the soil and the microbes and that relationships going on, you know, diverse root structures and what and how that was valuable in terms of using different species and different functional species, different families that have a symbiosis or collaboration. They either are very adaptable in terms of accessing nutrients like phosphorus, or they fix nitrogen, or they're great nutrient scavengers, or they really help with the decomposition. So in the hemp that Larry was growing, he had a challenge in terms of these stalks and residue that's left over. How is he going to manage that and be able to plant his next crop? So the decomposition and the food for the biology was an important aspect in terms of what the multi-species cover crop was addressing, as well as adding more diversity and helping with that soil formation. So we talked about what was the original soil organic matter in the prairie landscape, and how might that be changing with that management by utilizing multi-species cover crop. We also talked about impact. So this directly talks, you know, speaks to monitoring and observing changes in the function of the soil health based on management changes. So water infiltration improved. There was more opportunity for carbon capture because there were spaces in the crop rotation where now there were plants as opposed to bare soil, and the ability to integrate livestock. It was really quite interesting that, you know, Ian, as a livestock, is part of his enterprise, could integrate livestock. You know, that's an obvious connection, but also that was another tool and objective of Larry as and Daruk as well. So, you know, when we take all when we take these takeaways, we can connect them to the principles of regenerative agriculture. They become more meaningful than just a list. So, you know, it highlights that a context is an important principle that was considered here, as well as diversity and the livestock integration. They're all interrelated. It's not one technique or one principle or one ecological process that is impacted. It has cascading effects. So the soil function of all four processes, you know, the mineral cycle or nutrient and the biodiversity, the water cycle and carbon energy cycle were all impacted. So, you know, the complexity comes back into this viewpoint again. So, specifically back to monitoring, what are the objectives of the regenerative organic oats in terms of monitoring? And I'm hoping that with this conversation and conversations that we've had in the past and conversations to come, that we can have different feedback in terms of if the monitoring that's invested in terms of the program and your time becomes more of a valuable asset, and you know under and understanding and appreciate the monitoring component. So that really gives me the challenge of checking in terms of am I seeing the world because I think that's the way it should be seen, or are you folks on board in terms of appreciating that value and being able to use that to move yourself forward. So the objective with the monitoring is really to determine the impact of management decision making. So if you've, put in diverse multi-species cover crops, is there an impact on one of those functions? Certainly you've had diversity, so you've addressed that, but what's the cascading effect? So what's been the impact in terms of improving your resource base? Also, the monitoring in itself, not the number, but the process is to help develop the understanding and also become a catalyst for connecting you as participants in the community of practice. How is that important? Well, we're going to develop a different language around understanding our ecology and, primarily sparking more curiosity in terms of how things could work and how you could utilize that in adapting your management. What is the strategy? So let's, figure out how is this piece put together? And so right now, the RU program is working on a 3-year program cycle. So we have our baseline monitoring, that's new entrants. So in 2025, new entrants, you will be getting a baseline monitoring. So the people who came in 2024, in 2024, our objective was to get a baseline monitoring. And then as you go through, year 2 and year 3, we're calling that interim monitoring. So we don't want to, throw everything at the first year and forget about the second and third year. There is baseline monitoring that we do a lot more comprehensive, and then there's some interim monitoring because we still want to visit your farm and keep engaged with you. The other understanding I think is helpful in terms of transparency is the investment in terms of the overall RU program, the monitoring that's with the staff and travel and lab fees is 20 to 25 to 33% of the program budget. So there's a significant portion of this overall investment in the program and investment in you that is for monitoring. And that monitoring and how it becomes part of the process of developing this community of practice and in your personal development as a manager and your interactions with the rest of the folks that are in this program. So baseline your monitoring will be asking you in a month or so to select areas or fields to monitor, and this will be fields that remain over the 3-year year over year. So we wouldn't be selecting another area in year 2 or year 3. We're asking for a minimum of 3 different types of areas. So in our managed field, we're looking for the best or the most consistent performing field. We're asking for the most challenging or inconsistent performing field. And then we're looking for an unmanaged area that closely represents those two selected fields. And for those people who are in, sorry, it should be ROC, ROA participants, the Regenerative Organic Alliance, which manages the program for the Regenerative Organic Certification. They have a another tier of areas or fields. So at a minimum, we're looking at three sites, and the best and most challenging, or if you're able to accept this, it could be your best and your poorest. We are asking that you select the comparison fields based on your knowledge of selected fields overall, not necessarily the crop performance, because as we heard last week, Ian, compared the yield of two oat fields, and it challenged him because he considered that the best yield came from the best yield of oats came from a different variety, but it also came from a field that he didn't expect the best results from. So we don't want to select based on crop performance. We want to take out that variable. We're wanting to look at knowledge of selected fields. And you might be new to to your farming operation, and we'll help you sort that out. Also, very important is we want the field selection to be where you've made a commitment to an action plan or a follow-up to an action plan that is in progress. So selecting on the two constraints. One is, what the past performance has been, as well as you're planning to do something to in your action plan that you want to see what the results are. So if you have questions about that, we'll talk about those. What are the limitations to this monitoring strategy? Well, number one is we're using a very limited number of sites within a very large management area. The emphasis here is really about understanding the value of this process and the information that you can derive from that, and also, for some people it's very valuable in terms of getting to the site, having somebody set up, a platform in terms of how you're going to put the data in, collecting the data, making sure it's done the right way consistently. And also we, are choosing labs that are and their analysis in terms of the best fit to what we're trying to create here in terms of regenerative systems. Some of the comparisons will reveal relative trends and don't necessarily say, well, this is direct correlation or cause or effect. So it seems kind of wishy-washy. It would be great to have confidence in a system of, in a mechanical system, if you do this and this functions, you put gas in the car, everything else is working, you'll get to where you want to go. In complex systems, always look for the unexpected, and ask curious questions in terms of, well, that's not what I expected, but it's been very valuable in terms of what I've learned. So comparing managed versus unmanaged, why the heck would we go to a fence line that is not managed and we're not doing the same thing to it? And that's directly the point, is that we want to see the impact of management within a similar context, the degree of resource degradation. So if the forest edge or the fence line represents, areas that haven't been managed, how well could those systems function and generate biomass or productivity without the management that you have chosen, or the people before you have chosen? A lot of degradation has happened over a period of time where we don't even have the opportunity right now to discern or evaluate how much degradation has happened over time. Because some of these, like soil organic matter and the way we're looking at it and measuring it, can change more slowly until it gets to a certain point, and maybe it quickens in terms of its change. And then why are we comparing our best areas to our poor or challenging? Everyone, I think, wants to figure out a way of how do you get the most challenging areas to perform like the best, because if you have a low percentage of best carrying a high percentage of challenging, that makes it very difficult for you to derive your productivity and profitability. So we want to be able to improve those challenging areas more quickly as we learn and expand our knowledge, and maybe even develop an understanding of how do we get to the managed area. And this is one of the key reasons to collect some of the monitoring data and to challenge some of our biases, is we can be in a really great place with our best areas. We want our knowledge to be able to improve and expand and move our challenging areas more quickly. And we want to reveal what the limitation of the resource space, the resource. So what is inhibiting our water infiltration or our bulk density, and get more information about the management approach. So, what's all involved in this monitoring toolbox? So we've selected our three different sites, and some of that will be beforehand in before the farm visit is set up. And some of it will be a discussion that the program coordinators will have with you on the farm. So they're going to do some sampling, and that sampling will be sent for analysis. And they're also going to use some tools that you could have on your farm, and you could utilize at any other time. And they're handy, and they just add more to the opportunity for observations, like digging a soil pit, looking at roots. But let's first look at the lab analysis and what the sampling will involve that's sent to a lab. So we're working with biological systems. There's a lot of biology that we can't see. There's a lot of interactions that are taking place. And so there will be samples that will be sent to, currently we're using Care Labs to look at biology in terms of what are the organisms that are there, what functional groups are there, with fungal biomass, bacterial biomass, protozoal functional groups, and nematode functional groups. And then also they'll be using some of the information from some of the chemistry and physical components to make and extrapolate some meaning to this biology, because as you can understand, the biology is one of the most dynamic community. So it means they change over time and space fairly quickly. We're also looking at soil physical properties. So how are the solid components and the pore open spaces configured in terms of, the percent sand, silt, and clay, the textural classification, how is that pore space compressed in terms of bulk density, and then how does that impact the carbon, the nitrogen, the gases, the carbon nitrogen ratio, and the soil respiration, how is the biology re responding to that physical property, the stability of the or ability of that solid portion to stay together. And then we're also looking at soil chemistry. What are the nutrients or the chemistry components, the phosphorus, potassium, magnesium, and the in terms of the macronutrients and the micronutrients, the organic matter, cation exchange capacity, and some of those ratios. In many other systems, this chemistry is one of the highlights or the part or the components that is focused on, and maybe to the detriment of appreciating these other factors. And also the soil biology and all the various interactions is something that is in, in development, and we're improving and elevating our knowledge there. The lab techniques have become a lot more advanced. So it's exciting that we can add this component and, together collaborate in terms of developing our knowledge here. Also, some plant components that we will be gathering and sending to lab for nutrient analysis. So what's happening in the soil? We can, take those samples and have an idea of what's going on. But how does it end up in the plant? How does the interaction of the plant and the soil and a root system and biology and the nutrients that are there, how does that end up in the plant? And as a way of us making a connection between, if we're, our focus on management is trying to improve the nutrient cycling, and what is that gap of understanding between the soil chemistry and the biology? Because biology is, what's driving most of the access to nutrients. So I'm using nutrients and chemistry sort of interchangeably here. How does that end up in the tissue? Because, that primarily is the component in terms of, what you're producing and what you're selling. Forage analysis might be an option because as we move from our baseline year to our second and third year, you might be putting in a cover crop and looking at a cover crop. So it's got a lot of diversity. It's not really specific to a plant variety or plant growth. We might take that all as a composite sample, so a bulk sample of the cover crop, and analyze it like we would a hay or other forage. And from there, we can derive again what is the nutrient status, or what are the minerals that are making it into that cover crop, and relating that to what's happening in the soil chemistry, physical biology component. So we might take a forage analysis. And then the other thing that we have added, I didn't add here, is looking at the actual yield of the oats and analyzing them for the nutritional or the plumps and thins. So I didn't add that here, and that's something that we'll need to talk about in terms of the value of that and how we can add that in. All right. The infield observations, these can happen at any time, and these are things that you inherently see, and maybe we can make that practice and put it together in a way that gives you an opportunity to make different conclusions and adapt your management plan. But you know, water infiltration and you know, that can be very eye-opening. I've seen that aha moments quite often. We're really trying to create an aha moment in terms of understanding the water infiltration that would happen in a unmanaged area to, you know, your two different management areas, and how variable that might be, because you might be adding a lot of things in terms of trying to reduce the compaction, and the water infiltration really is an insight to a lot of things that are going on. We'll use a penetrometer. So that's a way of evaluating soil compaction and where that soil compaction might be occurring. We might be digging a soil pit, and we'll look at, you know, where the soil horizon, the changes in your top layers to your middle layers to your base layer. What is the color? What's the texture? What's the feel? You know, what's the depth of that horizon? You folks in the prairies have been blessed with some very deep topsoil, but in some places that may have eroded on the knolls, and the horizon depth topsoil at the top of the knoll might be quite different than at the bottom of the knoll, in where the, you know, topsoil has moved to. We'll look at soil colors. Is there soil crusting, which would relate to, you know, soil that's exposed and it develops a more compressed crust, which would impede effective water infiltration. And the reverse of that is, you know, there might be water ponding. We might take note of the soil smell and the soil feel. Definitely always looking at the root growth. So are the roots able to fully explore the topsoil, or is there a layer that's compressed, which we would, you know, did it look at where that happens in terms of a plow pan, where the soil has been compressed and that impedes water, impedes gas exchange, impedes the roots. We'll take note of ground cover, you know, relative to the, you know, the time within the cropping cycle. We'll measure bricks. That's taking the sap from the plant, and looking at the concentration of sugars, which is a complex of minerals, and using the refractometer, and we could compare, you know, crops that look really good versus crops that look really poor, or as Ian pointed out, comparing the crops to weeds and having maybe a different viewpoint of weeds' ability to scavenging nutrients and a way of adding diversity to our cropping systems that we might not be appreciating, being able to add to our nutrient cycling. Noting overall plant health, and as you saw in an earlier picture of looking at the soil root system and just giving us an idea of what life is happening in there that we can see with our eye in the soil or in the landscape around. So that's an overview of the monitoring, sort of, I'm going to call it toolbox, but the monitoring strategy and what's going to occur in terms of where you are in the program. And, you know, the commitment on your part is to knowing your context and your knowledge of your fields and what your overall management plan is to select those. I think the thing that becomes of most surprise is the time commitment that it takes, at least half a day. And in some cases, depending on travel and location of where the sites are, it might take longer than that. And what we're really asking of you is as much as possible to make yourself available to take part in the monitoring. And also, I think as the program develops, is what's the blend of resources that we can find ways of providing to you in terms of the program coordinators being there with you to make sure we're setting you up well in terms of the process and how it's done and how to put the data in, and if there's a balance in terms of you really appreciate that's being done, but maybe as follow-ups you would like you would appreciate having a resource to help you with that. And that's one of the challenges we're dealing with in terms of this overall program is we have a very big distance to cover and travel becomes a really large component of it. So I think collectively, as we go through this program, your input would be really helpful in terms of would you value a service in terms of helping you in your interim years or, after the 3 year period to help find those resources to keep you on track, to keep you engaged. Because you know what investment's being made up front in terms of while you're in the program, how can you benefit from that and our partners and all of us within that program to continue that. I know I've asked you a lot of different questions to think about. I'm really looking forward to your responses. And I guess appreciating that the change process is challenging, can be stressful. It really matters the way that we're looking at it. Belief systems are really about how we think about things, and our actions really are a real sense that our beliefs are changing, but we need action in order for us to really get a concrete sense of what those belief systems are. And as in farming, you have no choice except for to act. You have to act on many different decisions, day to day and season to season. So if stress is in your brain, it's telling you to act and a single and a signaled urge to do something. And in that whole change process, there's a resistance, there's a feeling of things aren't in your control and there's chaos. And then you grab onto something that you actually are seeing some impact of change. And this is really where, in that process, down here at the bottom of the U, where the monitoring can really be helpful in terms of some validation that you've made an intention to have a management change and there's some change happening. It may be the target that you expected, it may be something totally unexpected and wonderful. It might be, something you didn't expect and tells you to say, hey, you're not going in the right direction. And then as you integrate that into your management system, you're in a new state. You've made that transformation. So I don't take any of this lightly, and that it is challenging. I appreciate all that I see and hear from you in terms of what that process is like, and I look forward to hearing more about it.